Chapter 13. The light glowing through the bubbling hot spring bathed Cleia in shades of teal, and as her eyes cut through the rising steam, I felt the need within them. The Nyx woman had waited so long for this, and now it was finally her turn. My member flexed and throbbed as Cleia dipped down into the water once, then rose up. Water trickled down her bare breasts, and her dark nipples hardened against the cool air in the half-light. I stepped forward, untied my belt, and slid it out of the loops of my pants. The turquoise-haired woman's eyes followed my movements hungrily, and she bit her lip as I tucked my thumbs into the waistband of my underwear and ripped them down. I stepped forward through the low brush and held my throbbing member tightly in my hands. Cleia lowered herself deeper into the warm water and held her arms close to her bare chest, but kept her icy-colored eyes intent on my face. I stepped into the water, found a low stone to hold my footing, and lowered myself in a bit deeper. The water was warm, a bit hotter than expected, but not enough to scald either of us.
"Charles,"
Cleia whispered and reached out for me.
"I've waited so long for this."
"I have too, my darling. I've patiently waited for this from the moment you came out of my machine. You're so beautiful, Cleia, it almost hurts to look at you." I reached out for her through the thick steam, and my hand connected with her shoulder. I brought the Nyx woman closer, and her mouth found mine in the shifting fog. The turquoise-haired beauty wrapped an arm around my shoulders as her hand dipped underneath the water and desperately stroked my hardened manhood. I grunted against closed lips and rolled my head back against my shoulders as ecstasy washed over me in waves. Cleia placed a hand on my shoulder, pushed me back toward the low rock wall of the hot spring, and forced me half out of the water. My erect penis throbbed in the air, and droplets of warm water streamed down its enormous length. The Nyx woman's icy eyes widened as she finally got a look at my massive sword, and then she purred as she wrapped her delicate hand around it.
"That is amazing,"
I groaned aloud as she began to move her hand up and down my length in slow, smooth strokes. The turquoise-haired woman leaned forward and took me into her mouth. Her tongue moved over the head of my penis, and I felt myself twitch in pleasure. Cleia pushed me deeper between her lips until I felt her hot breath on my pelvis as she took me entirely into her hungry lips. The Nyx woman made a soft squeal as my member flexed in her mouth and bumped against the back of her throat. More explicit sounds escaped my lips as I placed my hand on the back of her head and bobbed her mouth up and down on my member. The turquoise-haired woman moaned with her mouth filled with me, and one of her hands snaked out and cupped my balls into her palm. She touched them tenderly, and I threw my head back as I moaned into the open air. Cleia moved even faster, and her slurping sounds became louder as she desperately sucked on my penis. I felt as if I was about to burst, so I gripped the Nyx girl by the shoulders and pushed her away from me. Saliva dripped down her chin, and she licked at her wet lips with her pink tongue.
"Amazing!"
I stared down at her as I lowered my right foot into the hot water, then the left.
"I was trained to please and kill, but I just want to pleasure you forever."
Cleia waded backward into the water as I stepped fully in, then lowered myself onto the stone seat in the water. The turquoise-haired woman came closer as she lifted her hands out of the water and let the steaming liquid drip onto her bare shoulders and breasts.
"I need to be deep inside of you, right now."
My hand shot out and grabbed her roughly by the wrist. I savagely pulled her to me, gripped her by her thick hips, and positioned her curvy form over mine. In the steaming water, the head of my penis brushed against her lips, and Cleia mewled as she spread her legs open wide for me to enter.
"Slowly, my love. I want this moment, when you first spread me open, to last for as long as possible."
"I'll try."
I held onto her tightly and lowered her onto my cock. The Nyx woman's lips spread as I pushed deep inside her with an agonizing slowness, and Cleia's head fell back as she moaned in pleasure. Her enormous breast bobbed out of the water, and I attacked the left one with my mouth. I took her hardened nipple into my lips and bit down on it gently.
Oh, so good.
The Nyx girl moaned even louder as she adjusted her legs and forced me in deeper. So I grunted and thrust it up inside of her. The water around us was hot, and Cleia's vagina felt like exquisite silk wrapping around my penis. I moved inside of her at such a slow speed, and the turquoise-haired woman's head rolled back between her shoulder blades as she moaned and mewled sweetly. Sweat rolled down her temples, and when she opened her eyes, they were heated with lust, and I knew she was close to climaxing. I pulled out of her quickly, then thrust back in roughly. I did it over and over until the Nyx girl's hand slammed down onto my shoulders and her nails dug into my flesh. Her hips rolled and bucked against me as I pushed her closer to orgasm. Sweet obscenities fell from her plump lips, and I smashed my lips to hers as I cupped the back of her head. My tongue slipped into her mouth and wrapped around hers as I slammed inside her vagina with all of my might. Cleia moaned against my lips, but the sound was caught in my mouth. I ran the fingers of my right hand through her long turquoise hair as my left hand cupped the smooth flesh of her huge, perfect ass. I squeezed it hard as I forced her down hard onto my steel rod. From the heated look in Cleia's eyes, I could tell she was close to orgasm, and I dropped my hand from her hair to join the other on her thick hips. I gripped her hard and bounced her on top of my cock, and her enormous breast jiggled in my face and sloshed steaming water over my shoulders.
Yes, Charles, yes!
Cleia moaned as her mouth fell open, and her vagina tightened and convulsed around my member. I helped her orgasm heighten as I pounded into her, and once the Nyx girl went limp, I lifted her off me and pinned her against the stone wall of the hot spring. I slid back inside of her quickly, and Cleia wrapped her legs around my waist. I looked deeply into her eyes as I made love to her, and she stared back as she caressed my face. I couldn't look away from her. I was totally enwrapped with her beauty in the evening light. Her skin glowed with droplets of sweat that looked like dew. Her lips were moist and parted as soft moans fell out from in between them. I slammed into her tunnel as I gripped onto her shoulder tightly. The Nyx woman moved her hips against me, screamed through her ecstasy, and bucked in time with my movement. Her breathing was ragged as it hit my neck and sent shivers racing all over my body. I'm getting close.
Oh, release deep inside of me. Give me your babies, Charles. Oh, yes, I'm fertile and ready for your seed.
I slammed into her as deep as I could while I pinned her there, and finally my member seized and poured my frothy semen deep inside of her pulsing walls like a river flooding into a valley once the dam breaks.
Oh, yes!
Cleia's vagina convulsed around me in an orgasm I wasn't expecting, and our moans collided in the air and lifted higher together in the darkness. Ah, oh, amazing! I gasped as I slowly thrust into her until the last drops from my body had filled her accepting body, and when I finished, the turquoise-haired woman collapsed into my arms. Then I held her tightly and ran my fingers through her thick, slick hair for a moment as she caught her breath.
Charles!
Cleia gasped, held on to me tightly, and leaned her forehead against my shoulder.
By science, Charles!
What is it, my love? What's the matter?
I didn't doubt my sisters.
The Nyx woman chuckled under her breath and shook her head.
But the way they talked about it earlier, I thought it would be a magical experience.
Was it not?
It was more than magical, Charles. I don't think I've ever felt something so good in my life. It's no wonder that my sisters are seemingly addicted to having sex with you. But now I finally understand. I don't remember much from Kalara's past, as I told you earlier, but I'm almost certain that she slept with a man during her time at the palace with the queen. I have vague memories of what it was like, but it was nothing like that, Charles. I can't stop thinking about it. I want to do it over and over again.
We can, if that's what you want.
Yes. But let me rest for a moment. I feel as if I'm about to keel over from exhaustion. But the hot spring is helping quite a bit with my water loss.
Water loss? What do you mean?
Oh, I forgot to tell you. Over time, if I exert myself too much, I need to either drink a lot of water or submerge myself. I think it's because I was once an aquatic animal and needed to be in water 24/7.
When did you discover this?
Only recently. I know I mentioned that I felt something building up inside of me, and I'm pretty sure all of it started with my need to stay hydrated. Even when I'm in the water, I feel that strange sensation from before, as if something's about to happen.
What does it feel like? My other women's powers may be different, but the activation process stays the same for all of them.
Well, when I'm in the water, it feels like a tingling sensation all over my skin, especially my legs. Have I told you how strange it is to have legs, Charles? They're just these two weird appendages that you walk on, and they have independent bones that work together as a unit. I spent most of my life with a single tail that got me from one part of the lake to the other. Sorry, I got off topic for a second. But when I fully submerge myself in water, like the bathtub or this hot spring, it feels as if my pores are opening up and drinking in all of the water. When I try to move, my legs feel as if they're gluing themselves together to form a much larger tail. Isn't that weird? Or is it not really weird at all?
It certainly could be part of your power manifesting. Or it could be your Nyx body trying to acclimate to its place in the life of a human. I definitely could do some tests and see if what you said is true.
Yes!
Cleia nodded and clapped her hands together excitedly.
But it might not make much of a difference if my power is in the process of showing itself.
True, but I'm interested in how each of your abilities develops and changes with your bodies. Maybe once all of this is over, we'll run some tests on each of the monster women to find out.
That sounds interesting. But Charles, is it all right if I say something a bit strange?
Of course, I inclined my head. Say whatever you want, my love.
I have this odd feeling,
the turquoise-haired woman murmured and pressed a hand in the middle of her bare chest.
I don't know what to call it, but a sense? Is that the right word, Charles? A sense that Edney's power is already fully developed. I don't know why I feel this way, but whenever I'm around her, I can physically feel it in the air. I have a sneaking suspicion it might be because of the changes you made to your machine right before she was transformed. But whenever I'm near her, I feel her power all around me. Don't get me wrong. I love Edney. I do. She's my sister, and I would do anything for her. But her power is terrifying, and we haven't even witnessed it yet.
I have the same feeling. But at this moment in time, I don't think that Edney knows how to use her brand new abilities. She's been given them and is able to use them immediately, but, well, I suspect that she's also afraid. She's lived so long with the powers that she already has, and being given these new ones, well, she doesn't know what to do.
Charles, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow? I'm worried.
I breathed a heavy sigh and leaned my back against the warm stone wall behind me. We were supposed to meet with the citizens of Edenheart and answer their questions, but I had no idea what Edney had planned if it were to go south. The Duchess couldn't use her powers yet because she didn't know how, and the city's constables had proved to us that they were against us. Listen, I soothed and placed an arm around her shoulders. We can't control what the aristocrats will do, that's for certain. But if things do take a turn for the worse, I'll be there, and so will your sisters. We have to protect our family, no matter what. You and your sisters are the most important people in this world to me. I need you to remember that I've been through a lot of hairy situations with the threat of death hanging over my head, and I'm still here, next to you. There's no need to be afraid, Cleia. I'll be here, and we'll get through this together. I pressed my lips together in a firm line, and then inclined my head toward the darkened sky above us. Since we were so far away from the city and the manor, the stars were exceptionally bright tonight, and I could have sworn I saw a shooting star blast across the dark backdrop. "We should probably head back to the house," I murmured, stood up, and offered the Nyx woman my hand. We have a long day ahead of us tomorrow, and we need to rest.
All right, Charles.
The turquoise-haired woman nodded and then allowed me to pull her to her feet in the water.
I do want to make love with you again, but I'm also quite tired. It has been a long and exciting day for all of us. I wonder how our sisters are doing back at the duchy. I hope they're settling in well with the soldiers.
I'm sure that Edeny's guards are making them feel perfectly welcome, I nodded, helped the Nyx woman out of the water, and then got dressed. Then, once they're comfortable, the soldiers and Edeny will train them on how to fight, and they'll be great assets to our army.
I hope so.
Cleia smiled softly and then slipped her soft hand into mine.
I'll try to be brave tomorrow, Charles, for you and my sisters.
You don't have to try to be brave, Cleia. I already know deep in my heart that you are. Since I created you, you've always been ready and willing to fight for your sisters and me. The two of us walked silently through the woods in the direction of home. Cleia hung her head back and stared up at the twinkling stars above our heads. I knew that the Nyx woman was afraid and unsure of what would happen tomorrow, but I already knew from past experiences that we would make it out all right. Edeny and I had a plan, and if we stuck with it, nothing would go wrong. Or, at least, I hoped so. Not that it mattered if it did, because I had Edeny and four of the most powerful monster women on my side. The 10-minute walk flew by, and when we finally reached the house, most of the windows were dark. The only light on was a single candle in the second-story master bedroom. One of my women had probably left it lit for when Cleia and I made it back home. Edeny, Valerie, Daisy, and Ryan must have already gone to bed, and Cleia and I hurried toward the front door while still holding hands. This moment seemed like the calm before the approaching storm, and I wanted to enjoy it while it lasted, even if it was only for a few seconds. I wasn't sure when we'd be able to relax like this again. After tomorrow, everything could change. If the aristocrats revolted against us even more, Edeny and I had no other choice than to trap and transform all of them at once. After all of the aristocrats in Edenheart were monster women, we'd add them to our armies and move on to the next city. It was scary to think about, but also unbelievably exciting. My machine and I were finally making a difference in the world. And before long, every last aristocrat across the globe would be transformed into a monster girl. I reached for the door's handle, opened it slowly, and then waved Cleia inside. The Nyx woman climbed the stairs as I shut the door behind me and hastily locked it.
Thank you for a wonderful time.
The turquoise-haired woman smiled down at me over her shoulder and quietly crept upstairs to bed. I had a few things I needed to take care of first, so I headed out of the house toward the laboratory. We would need weapons to take out the aristocrats, and I had a brilliant idea. I wasn't sure if they'd work, but I had to try. Edeny's augmented powers hadn't activated themselves yet, and we couldn't attack the aristocrats empty-handed. I slipped inside of the darkened laboratory, and the massive metal door creaked eerily. When I flipped on the switch beside the door jamb, the room flooded with unforgiving fluorescent light. AB floated and bobbed in his tank at the far end of the room, but didn't react to my sudden appearance.
Ma'am, that's not a wrench.
The brain mumbled into my consciousness.
That's a bacon, baby.
It seemed that the brain was dreaming, though I'd had no idea that AB could actually do that. He was a brain, after all. But to dive deep into REM, the reanimated organ would have to have eyes to achieve such things.
I didn't ask for this,
AB muttered in an annoyed tone.
Where are the honeysuckle baboons I ordered?
I chuckled lightly under my breath and headed to the far side of the room where I kept most of the spare copper sheeting. I grabbed the rest of my tools from the cabinet, set them down on my work table, and then grabbed tubes and bottles filled with potions from the glass cabinet on the far side of the laboratory. I sat down with a soft, muffled thump, slipped on a pair of gloves, and grabbed a pair of pliers. The device I had in mind was something oval-shaped, made from the spare copper with hinges to release the gas I'd placed inside. The potion I intended to prepare was relatively easy to craft, and I had all of the components here on my work table. The hardest part of all of this would be crafting six of these devices, but I had to do it. I knew my women were strong, but we needed a weapon to use against the aristocrats if something went wrong. If I built this device, it would ensure that we'd win this battle, and Edenheart would be ours. I used the pliers, a small rounded hammer, and began working on the contraptions. I hammered at the warm-toned metal sheeting until it took a rounder shape and then worked on flattening out the edges so they'd fit together. The most challenging part was the hinges of the metal flap that would open and force the mixture out into the air. By the time I finished, I had 6 identical devices resting on my work table, and my next course of action was to mix the potions and create the mist that would knock all of the aristocrats out. I grabbed a large, thin-necked flask from the cabinet and popped out the cork of one of the smaller bottles with a teal-colored liquid inside. I poured the potion into the container, tipped in a few droplets of a red concoction, and then gripped the flask. I swirled the 2 liquids together while I used my free hand to open a container of finely ground powder, grabbed a pinch, and sprinkled it through the flask's opening. The potion's color shifted from a light purple to a deep wine color in seconds and began to produce a pastel pink smoke. I hastily pressed my thumb over the bottle's opening, grabbed the first device, and funneled the liquid inside. Each time I filled a device, I used my thumb to snap the hinge closed and trap the liquid and the smoke inside. It didn't take me very long to use up all of the noxious potion and fill up each copper device. I set them aside and grabbed a large duffel bag I used for medical supplies from the floor. I carefully placed each contraption into the satchel and carried it upstairs into the foyer. I left the bag by the front door, where I wouldn't forget it in the morning, and headed toward bed on the second floor. When I slipped into the master bedroom, all of my women laid together, cuddled up in a pile on the enormous bed. There was just enough room for all of them. But if I added another woman to our family, I'd have to build a bigger bed for all of us. I stripped off all of my clothes, pulled on a clean pair of underwear, and then cradled into my place directly in the middle of the bed. My women traded places every night, so each of them got to sleep beside me during 1 or 2 nights of the week. Tonight, Valerie laid on the left of me and Ryan laid on the right. Both of them were already sleeping soundly when I slid in between them, but when I wrapped an arm around Ryan, the imp woman sighed and snuggled closer to my bare chest. Though I was nervous about the coming day, I fell quickly into a dreamless slumber and only awoke when the sun rose in the east. I sat up straight in bed and noticed that I wasn't the only one already awake. Ryan, Valerie, Daisy, Josephine, and Cleia all slept happily beside me, but Edeny was the only one missing from the group. I scooted to the edge of the bed, pulled on a pair of black trousers, buttoned up my white shirt, and then kicked on a pair of my shoes before I slipped out of the door and into the hall. The hall and stairwell beyond were utterly silent, and as I crept down them, a shadow outside the front door passed over the stained glass windows. I opened the door and cleared my throat to announce my presence, but Edeny stood at the end of the porch with her back to me. "You're up early. Did you have a bad dream or something?"
"I couldn't sleep,"
the Duchess murmured as she gazed out over the city below.
"I think I got maybe an hour or two of sleep in total, but that's understandable for the situation we're in. I want to say that I'm excited about the happenings of today, but I don't think that's the right word to describe exactly what I'm feeling."
"Are you nervous?"
"No."
The she-wolf shook her head.
"Not at all. I'm ready for all of this to be over with. I know that I used to be an aristocrat, and I used to behave exactly like all of them, but it seems so long ago. I'm a different woman now, Charles. Before long, maybe within a few hours or days, the women of this city will be different too. Then they'll be a part of my army and believe all of the same things as we do. They'll fight alongside us, and together we'll kill the queen and take over the capital."
The wolf woman fell silent, and I came to stand beside her. I stared down at Edenheart and noticed the giant black mark in the distance where the mercantile should have been. I breathed in slowly, brushed her hand with my own, and then pulled the stunning she-wolf to my side.
"The town crier will be making their rounds soon,"
Edeny whispered into my ear.
"We should go prepare to leave before any of the aristocrats hear and immediately go to the Hall of Justice. I don't want any of them to get there before the rest of us do."
"We'll have to wake up the rest of the women. We'll need to leave as soon as..." The door behind us swung open, and both Valerie and Ryan stuck their heads out. The ash blonde waved excitedly, and then she bounded out toward us.
Don't worry! We're already up, and we're getting ready to go!
Excellent,
the Duchess nodded.
Then what are we waiting for? This is so exciting! Daisy, Cleia, and Josephine are getting ready to leave right now. Charles, is it all right if Ryan and I go hitch the horses?
There's no need.
The she-wolf shook her head.
I sent orders to my servants last night, and they're sending us an unmarked carriage. It should be here within the next few minutes.
An unmarked carriage?
Ryan asked.
What is that?
It's a carriage that looks exactly like any other that you would see riding down the streets of Edenheart. When you think of a carriage that the Duchess would have, what do you imagine?
The big white and gold one. The one with the beautiful curtains and the snow-white horses with the royal blue trim tack.
Exactly. Which means it's incredibly recognizable. And if the aristocrats were to see that riding through the streets of Edenheart, they'd swarm it. I have a particular carriage prepared specifically for times like these, when I need to hide from my citizens.
Really?
The imp woman asked.
Actually, every single duchess or leader has an unmarked carriage that they use when they don't want their citizens to see them. My mother had one, though it was pretty recognizable, and my great-grandmother had one. I believe every single one of my ancestors had at least one or two.
Have you had to use it before?
Only once. It was right after my mother passed, and I became the Duchess. Though I was trained for my position, I was still young and made a few mistakes. The mistake I made had to do with the royal banknotes, and the aristocrats weren't pleased with me. That was the day that I learned that I should never get in between the aristocrats and their monies, unless I really wanted to anger them.
Like right now. It's their choice. We either take their money, property, and consorts, or we take their lives, and all of those things, regardless. The Duchess turned, crossed her arms over her chest, and leaned her head back to admire me. The she-wolf sighed softly, and her violet eyes sparkled brightly in the early morning sunlight. I felt incredibly lucky to have not only created this woman, but to love and protect her, too. I felt that way about all of my monster women, and today, all of us took a step toward the future we wanted.
Are we ready to go?
Josephine asked, popped her head out of the door, and then came out onto the porch.
It's still early, but the town criers are probably making their rounds.
Yes, we're all ready. We're just waiting on Edenie's carriage to get here.
And there it is.
The she-wolf pointed down the drive.
Get ready, everyone. Charles is a few minutes away from controlling this whole city. Isn't that strange? I already hold control over Edenheart, but once all of the aristocrats are transformed, the city will truly be his. They will obey his every command. I can't wait.
Daisy and Cleia hurriedly stepped out of the front door and closed it as the rest of us moved down the front stairs and into the gravel. The carriage that pulled up along the drive looked expensive but plain. The polished wood was a deep cherry color, and iron lamps hung from the sides. Opaque scarlet curtains hung inside of the panes of the windows and obscured the inside of the coach. Even the coachman sitting at the front and controlling the horses looked very inconspicuous. The older man pulled back the reins with a bark, slowed down the horses, and then guided the carriage in front of us.
"Good morning, my lady,"
the older man croaked in a deep, throaty voice that reminded me of an ancient door creaking open.
"To the Hall of Justice, m'lady?"
"Yes,"
Edenie nodded, lifted her skirts, and stepped toward the carriage's heavy door.
"Have the guards been dispatched?"
"Yes, m'lady," the coachman grumbled. "They left the duchy around 4 a.m. this morning, and they've positioned themselves all around the hall for your arrival."
"And the trappers? I haven't heard back from them in a few days."
"Ah, yes."
The coachman licked his lips, and fear flashed behind his dark brown eyes.
"We dispatched another 50 of them 4 days ago to find a missing party, and it seems that the other group is dead."
"What? What do you mean? They're dead?"
"Yes, m'lady."
The older male bowed his head.
"From the letters we've received from the second trapper's party, They encountered, a drake, and all 52 of the men were killed.
Edenee's violet eyes widened, her face immediately paled, and her thin, delicate hands shook as she held tightly onto her crooked cane.
A drake?
Ryan asked with a wrinkled nose.
What's that?
It's part of the dragon species, but it's the only one that doesn't have the ability to fly. It has more of a lizard-like body. They're much smaller than regular dragons, but they're just as powerful as their aviary counterparts.
I half expected the she-wolf to keel over, but suddenly she turned and brushed off the skirt of her dress before reaching for the door.
After you've finished here, return to the duchy and send a servant to the soldiers' quarters. Tell the soldiers to note the location where the trappers were slaughtered and send out our special forces. This will be a trial run for them, but I want them to bring in the drake completely unharmed.
Edenee!
Josephine interrupted.
Wait!
The Duchess blinked rapidly and then turned to stare down at her honey-blonde sister.
What is it?
The she-wolf asked.
I want to go after the drake,
the heiress explained, placed her knit fingers to her chest, and then looked between me and the wolf woman.
Please, I need to do this.
Why, we have trappers for a reason. You just heard that this beast killed 52 men. It's far too dangerous.
No.
Josephine shook her head.
Please, I know when you refer to these special forces, it's our new monster sisters, but I want to be included too. I want to go along with them and fight this beast. If we manage to catch it, we can retrieve its elemental core, and we can begin using it on all of the aristocrats we capture. Please, Charles, I want to do this so badly.
I breathed deeply and glanced over to Edenee, but the Duchess shook her head and parted her plump lips to speak.
It's not my decision, Charles. It's yours. You're the one in charge, and you're the one who created all of the monster women. Do you think we should do this?
I was about to answer when Valerie stepped up behind the honey blonde, and Cleia quickly followed suit.
I want to do this,
the feline woman assured.
I think we should go defeat the drake for our family's sake.
Me too,
the Nyx woman nodded.
We shouldn't send off our new sisters to do our dirty work. We should be the ones on the front lines with them.
What do you two think? I asked over the top of their heads and looked to Daisy and Ryan. The imp woman and the bear girl glanced at each other out of the corners of their eyes and seemed to come to a decision. The brunette stepped forward, placed a firm hand on Josephine's shoulder, and nodded.
I agree with Josephine. This is our family and our beliefs, so this is the right thing to do.
How far away did the trappers go? I asked the coachman.
They're up high in the mountains, the older man murmured. A 3 or 4 days' journey from here. That's why we thought it was taking so long for their letters to get here.
Edenee, I guess we're going to trap the drake, too.
Right now?
The she-wolf gasped and pressed a delicate hand to her chest. No, not right now, after we take care of all of the aristocrats.
When will the new trapper set out for the location?
Josephine asked the older male.
They will leave by tomorrow. Or possibly the day after, if you postpone them with your own plans.
The Duchess paused for a moment as all eyes turned to her, and silence fell over all of us.
Charles, what would you have us do?
We can wait a few days, I said.
Postpone them for 2 days, then.
The Duchess chuckled to the driver.
All of us and the special forces are going with them. Now, can we get in and head toward the Hall of Justice? Charles and the rest of us have some very important business to attend to.
I gathered all the devices I had prepared, and then all of us climbed into the carriage, and I slammed the door shut right as the coachman pulled away from the house. Within 2 days, we would journey to the mountains and fight against a fearsome drake, but that seemed quite peaceful compared to having to deal with the angry, unruly aristocrats. When we finally made it down to Edenheart, the streets were unusually busy compared to the average morning, and I knew exactly why. The town criers had already made their rounds, and the aristocrats had heard the news of the Duchess's meeting. The nobles rushed around, shouting and screaming to each other from opposite sides of the streets. Some of them seemed excited, while others seemed utterly enraged. From where I sat in the back of the carriage, I could see out of the curtains, but no one on the outside could see in.
I guess she took our little warning pretty seriously.
I heard a woman cackle as we passed.
Good.
Another woman barked.
She needs to take us seriously. We're not going to roll over and take this. She'll learn.
From beside me, the Duchess breathed in sharply and then placed a hand on my knee. I doubted that the people living in Edenheart had ever spoken about her like this before. Edeny had always ruled with an iron fist, but it seemed that she'd gone slack for too long, and her people deserved to be punished. "We're not going to take this lying down," I murmured under my breath. "Do you understand?"
"Charles?"
the she-wolf gasped. "They're going to taste your wrath," I murmured. "They need to know what it's like to be punished by a true ruler."
"Not my wrath, Charles."
Edeny shook her head.
"Yours. You're the one in charge of this whole operation. I'm merely the face of it. They may see me and blame me for all of this, but I'm not the one in charge. My wrath is your wrath, Charles. I do what you cannot. When I finally unleash my rage and anger, I won't be feeding off my own feelings. I'll be using all of yours. When I finally unleash everything within me, I'll hear the voices of every man who's died or been killed at the hands of an aristocrat. My anger and pain won't be my own. It'll be the generations of brutes, enslaved and murdered simply because of their sex."
"Do it for those who can't fight, Edeny. But also, do it for yourself. I think a lot of the aristocrats in this city don't like to admit it, but the brutes aren't the only ones who are oppressed. Aristocrats live in fear every day. The queen has everyone locked into a power struggle. She's given them wealth, property, and consorts, and for a while she keeps them coming. She makes sure that their lives are filled with all of the delicious things that consorts, workers, and servants could only dream about. But right as the nobles are filled with drink, they have all the money they could need, and their bellies are full to bursting, the queen snatches it all away. I don't want you to fight only for me, Edeny. Fight for yourself. Fight for the same women who oppress you."
"Fight for me, Edeny,"
Josephine interjected.
"Give them hell for me. I was raised to believe that men were equal, but I could never live a normal life because of them. I was forever tainted and ostracized because of the things I believed. No one even knew, but they sensed it within me and tossed me away from them. Kill them for all of the friends I've lost and for the friends I will never see again. Do it for the harlots I worked so hard to protect, but in the end, couldn't save at all."
"Do it for your sisters. Do it for us who stand by you and support you through every step of the way. We will not sit silently by as they tear you to pieces or attack you with their full strength. We will destroy them piece by piece, bit by bit, until there are no aristocrats left in this world. There will only be men and us monster women, and there will be peace."
"Do it for me. You remember how you treated me before the experiment, Edeny? Those aristocrats do those very same things to their servants, consorts, and workers. Remember what you told me about Delphine? The coroner came to take at least 3 dead bodies away from her home every month. Is that right? Do you think that men deserve to keep dying at the hands of aristocrats? No, they don't. Think, Edeny, that could have easily been me. If you hadn't fallen in love with me, you or another aristocrat could have killed me without a second thought. Even if you were in love with me, you could have lost me to another aristocrat. We fight together, and united, we are total order. Remember that, Edeny. You and I, and your sisters, we are the beginning of a whole new world where men can live out their lives without fear. We're the beginning of a whole new order, and right now, we need to show these aristocrats that we're the ones in charge right now. We're saying goodbye to the aristocratic class and saying hello to a whole new mass of monster women."